Today, a look at what's ahead in Cuba. As a member of the House International Relations Committee, Democratic Congressman William Delahunt of Massachusetts has visited Cuba 20 times. Over two decades in the House of Representatives, he's long supported an end to sanctions against Cuba and dropping the U.S. ban on travel to the country. Now, the health of Cuban President Fidel Castro is in question. Democrats are set to take control of Congress next month, and Representative Delahunt is just back from his latest visit to Cuba to see if there's any way to start a dialogue with the communist country during this period of transition. If you have questions about the way forward in Cuba, excuse me, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Congressman Delahunt with us from the studios of member station WGBH in Boston. Nice to speak with you today.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And I hope my cold gets better, too.
I was going to say bless you.
What did you try to accomplish on this trip?
Well, the purpose of the trip, and there was a delegation, a bipartisan delegation of some 10 members of Congress. Clearly, this was the largest number of members of Congress that have ever visited the island. Was to indicate and to send the message that despite the statement by the administration that they believe that now is not the time for conversation and for discussions, that the majority of members of both the House and the Senate believe to the contrary, that it is an historic opportunity to engage in dialogue. That was the purpose of the trip, and I think we accomplished that purpose.
Fidel Castro, of course, months ago transferred power temporarily to his brother, Raul. I know you were not able to speak with either of the Castro brothers while you were there. I wonder, though, did you come away with the feeling that change is in the air?
Well, there has been a transition, and I think the transition has been the ordinary, everyday functions of government no longer are being supervised by Fidel Castro. I think that transition, in fact, has already occurred. And I wouldn't expect to see Fidel Castro back at his desk making decisions in terms of the trains running on time, if you will. But what struck me was the rather unequivocal statement by senior government officials that he does not suffer from cancer and that his health problem is not terminal, and that we should expect to see some sort of appearance from Fidel Castro in the not-too-distant future. Now, that could be through a photograph or a video, or possibly a public appearance. So that leads me to the conclusion that Fidel Castro is still very much in charge in terms of the strategic interests of the Cuban government.
Mm. Some have spoken of perhaps in preparation for a transition and fears of what might happen then, that they have detected a crackdown in Cuba on dissidents, on economic experimentation, if you will. Is that something that you saw?
No, we didn't witness that. But again, we were there for a little more than 48 hours. But we did have conversations, obviously, with other Cubans other than government officials, including Cardinal Ortega, who I feel has a good read on what's happening in Cuba. And I think what was striking is that his statement and the statement of others that things are pretty much as they were.
Pretty much as they were.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our guest, of course, is William Delahunt, a congressman from Massachusetts, who's with us today from WBUR in Boston. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And why don't we begin with Gary. Gary calling us from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hi, Neil. Great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask the congressman, I mean, what is the perception of the Cuban community in America of the situation currently in Cuba, keeping in mind that there really hasn't been a change of regime even though power is transferred from Fidel to his brother, it's still the same basic political philosophy. And what does the congressman's consideration for the Cuban-American viewpoint on this situation, please?
Well, I think there's been a change in terms of attitude within the Cuban-American community. The polling data indicate, for example, on the issue of family travel, that the Cuban-American community is overwhelmingly supportive of a change. Now, for your listeners, I think it's important to understand that the Bush administration has tightened those restrictions back in 2004 so that today a Cuban-American can only visit once every 3 years certain identifiable members of his or her family. Prior to that, there was a more expansive definition of family, and Cuban-Americans were allowed to travel there once a year. And clearly there has been a shift of opinion based upon a generational evolution, if you will, as far as the Cuban-American family is concerned, you know, here in this country. So I think that the moderates, if you will, are gaining in terms of influence within the Cuban-American community.
May I follow up and ask,
sure. Well,
do you disagree with the original reasons that were originally laid down for the travel ban against Cuba?
Well, I do. I mean, I've always felt that the travel ban, if the travel ban did not exist, I believe that we would see a dramatically different Cuba today. You know, there is something to be said for sending millions of Americans to a small island in terms of conveying our attitudes for them to, you know, engage in conversation and in dialogue, you know, with the Cuban people. Hmm. And we've isolated ourselves by virtue of these travel restrictions. And I think after, you know, 47 or 48 years, it's safe to say that it hasn't worked. It's been totally ineffective and an abysmal failure.
I think it was one of your colleagues on this most recent visit who was quoted, though, as saying the Cubans may think they want American tourism. Let them try spring break for a couple of years and see how they like it.
Well, Neil, I'm going to take credit for that because I said that several years ago directly to Fidel Castro. I said, you know, the Bay of Pigs was a failure, but the next invasion, we will prevail. You know, we will come with overwhelming force, and we have a secret weapon. And he inquired as to what that was, and I said, the kid's on spring break, and he raised his hand in surrender. But, I mean, while it was meant to be humorous, there is some truth to that.
Yeah.
They simply do not have the numbers in terms of the security apparatus to really prevent you know, Americans from engaging in a significant way with Cubans. And really what's interesting is that the Cubans want Americans to come, including all of the major dissident figures on the island. I have a friend there. His name is Oscar Chepe Espinoza. And until recently, he was jailed in Cuba. He just penned a op-ed piece in the Miami Herald indicating that he and others believe that the travel restrictions should be lifted and the embargo ended. And I've always felt that that was a common-sense approach if we're really serious about nurturing democracy and opening political space in Cuba.
Gary, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another call in. This is Bob. Bob calling us from New York City.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming that the administration did not approve of your group going down to Cuba to do this independent, non authorized trip or
That was a congressional, bipartisan congressional delegation.
Yeah, I understand that. But the executive branch makes foreign policy. The legislative branch is oversight. It's much similar to when Senator Bai just went to Syria. Doesn't this show the world that our legislative branch is overstepping its jurisdiction, so to speak, and conducting a rogue or essentially rogue foreign policy? So what gives
Let's see if we get a response from Congressman, Congressman Delahunt.
Yeah, you know, obviously Congress does have a role in the formulation of foreign policy through the purse strings. You know, we fund, you know, and particularly the House of Representatives funds all of our foreign policy apparatus and our foreign assistance. I would suggest it's our obligation to go anywhere in this world and to make that assessment. This certainly wasn't a rogue enterprise. You know, in our system of government, Congress is an independent branch of government. And I think it's important for Congress to give voice to a majority opinion in this country, which is that the current policy has been a failure and is ineffective. And I think a dialogue, not negotiations, but a dialogue between members of Congress and foreign governments is more than appropriate. I think it's necessary. You know, we've had foreign policy failure after foreign policy failure in this country during the past 6 years because Congress has not exercised its appropriate role and conducted oversight of the executive branch. And I think it's important to understand, too, that this is not a partisan issue. You know, there's a group of us in the House of Representatives. We call ourselves the Cuba Working Group. There are 25 Democrats and 25 Republicans that share the same view as far as this particular policy is concerned. So this is not Democrats trying to embarrass or in any way, you know, create a partisan issue with the White House. It's about policy. We have a role in policy. And what I found particularly interesting is upon my return, reading a story in the Wall Street Journal, not a bastion, if you will, of liberalism, but a report there about a poll commissioned by the Wall Street Journal, which said the American people, if they could, 59% would have Congress create foreign policy and remove it from the executive branch, opposed to the 21% who favored the policies coming from the Bush administration.
Congressman Delahunt, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil.
William Delahunt, a Democrat from the state of Massachusetts who just returned with a bipartisan delegation from a visit to Cuba. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.